Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Everything is awful.
Everything is awful. On top of me serving jury duty, Syracuse lost to Louisville and didn't just lose. It was kind of miserable. Dan, your initial thoughts after pretty, I'd say, lackluster effort in the second half that reminds me a lot of what was happening in the first part of the season when we were really struggling.
I was going to say, I feel like we all kind of served jury duty in some form today. My overarching response, and I think it was colored by like having Twitter open during the game, is just after basically not losing a game for 3 weeks, Syracuse fans kind of freaked out tonight. And I'm not saying the game wasn't, you know, worth freaking out over. It was a really awful game. It was the worst performance since the St. John's game, I'd say. I don't really even think that's too much of a stretch at all. So yeah, the team played really poorly, but at the same time, they were playing a legit top 20 team on the road in a really tough place to play, a team that always gives Syracuse trouble. I saw some people being like, yeah, but this Louisville team doesn't even have anything to play for. But like, you could have said the same thing about Syracuse last year, and Syracuse played kind of, I think, some of its best ball last year down the stretch after the sanctions came through. So you can't like just go out there and say Syracuse should have automatically won this game because of Louisville being sanctioned or anything like that. I mean, this is a very good Louisville team, has a lot of seniors. And once they figured out the zone after like the first 6 or 7 minutes where they couldn't score a basket, like they just were going crazy. And I don't think the effort was great tonight by SU, but I don't know. I feel like people just overreacted a little bit to the first bad performance SU's had in like close to a month, if not more than a month. Like even the losses SU had at the beginning of ACC play, like there was good stuff to find there that ended up turning into wins down the stretch. And here, really awful game, but that'll happen. It's college basketball. I mean, Iowa lost to Penn State tonight, so it's not to like try to cover it up or say that, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just, you know, this team hadn't lost a lot lately. They lost tonight, and it's a very good team. So hopefully this isn't a sign of things to come. Hopefully it was just a bad performance.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, traveling to Louisville's never really been like a enviable proposition, and we haven't really done all that well, you know, doing it, nor have a lot of other teams. I think in general, like the narrative of like, you know, Louisville's just gonna like fall down and die, just is again, like it's a backwards one. I mean, Syracuse didn't really look great at the end of last year. I think that there's, I'm not gonna say they quit because that's not the case, but I think that they're like, I mean, that NC State game last year was just miserable, and the Virginia game was too. Like there was just a lot of bad basketball at the end of last year on top of some good basketball. I just think like toward the end, it just, The exhaustion of the season, both physically, mentally, emotionally, it all just kind of got to them. And for Louisville, maybe that time comes too, but I that time is not now. I think that there's a much different vibe around that team versus SU. SU was almost definitely NIT bound when they self-imposed a ban. And, you know, Louisville, on the other hand, is probably, I'd say, was going to be a dark horse Final Four team, and one that was definitely going to be playing with a top four seed. So you're definitely seeing a different type of team. And again, Syracuse, we knew in advance of this game that Syracuse had to do well on the boards, and that was the only way that they even had a shot against Louisville. They did very poorly on the boards, so as a result, you know, they lost the game. I mean, no, the overall numbers don't look great. They don't look like they're that big of a gulf. You know, it's 41-30 total, but, you know, you look in offensive rebounds, 14 for Louisville. Tyler Roberson has 0 offensive rebounds, which is a rarity for him, considering he's one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. Him and Coleman combined for 8 rebounds. Like it's that type of stuff where we're right. You can just look right there at the box score and say, "Oh, okay." Like that's why they lost.
Right, and Louisville is, you know, a pretty veteran team that plays a very distinct style. You could say the same thing about Syracuse when it made some teams look totally, you know, befuddled out there. So Louisville, they don't play the same 2-3 that we do. They play way more of the pressing style, but it's still kind of a unique brand of basketball. And SU is a pretty young team that a lot of these players haven't seen much of them. Obviously, Coleman hasn't played in 2 years. Lydon's a freshman. Howard, who played 23 minutes tonight, is a freshman. Alakai had never faced him before. He's a freshman. So we shouldn't be I'm not totally shocked that the team didn't look good. I am a little more shocked by how poorly the defense played in the second half and towards the end of the first half, because it looked quite good to start the game. But offensively, I mean, Louisville presents a lot of challenges. And like you said, they are a very good team. They would have been probably a 4 or 5 seed. They could have played their way higher than that had they not been, you know, had they not self-imposed that ban. So it's not like Syracuse went out and lost to Virginia Tech tonight or BC or Georgia Tech. Like, this is a top four ACC team, I think, pretty clearly.
Yeah, and to be honest, Virginia Tech right now is giving Miami all it can handle. Again, for a reminder to everyone, we're recording this on Wednesday night. You're listening to it on Thursday morning, so who knows what's going to happen. I mean, again, looking at the box score, there were two things that stand out to me, and they stand out in almost every Syracuse loss, and that goes for, you know, Syracuse games against great teams, Syracuse games against poor teams. You know, playing poorly on the boards and free throws. That's the story of Jim Boeheim's entire tenure, for better or for worse. And I think the large amount of wins that he has attributed to his name obviously drowns that out. But when you look at the box score of a Syracuse game that does not go in their favor, you point right to free throws and you point right to rebounds. And here, you know, 12-21 from the free throw line, despite the fact that they had an enormous advantage there. And obviously, like I mentioned, an 11 rebound deficit.
I just referred everyone to my still pinned tweet, which I almost took down after the BC game, and I'm glad that I did not, because it was pretty emblematic of tonight's team. Although I do think, like, the rebounding and the free throws were, I think, more symptoms than they were like the root cause. I think the root cause was the team just got blitzed.
Yeah, I definitely buy that narrative. Dan, you brought up a pretty good point, and it's one that I think everyone jumping off the deep end here tonight, you know, really should kind of put in perspective. Is just how young this team is, and that considering what we expected of this team going into the year, which was little, I'd say, like, going into the regular season, it was, yeah, maybe they, you know, grab a 10 or 11 seed or whatever. You know, like, they seem like they could get in a large bid. They seem like they could finish middle of the pack ACC. And so far, they've really played exactly like we thought they were going to, but I think people still got so caught up in you know, the battle for Atlantis results, and then got caught up in the losses, and then were ready to sweep the losses right under the rug as soon as things started getting good again. Dan, are you really surprised by anything that's happened this season? I just feel like I just don't think the Syracuse team has played really all that differently, considering how young they are, which, again, you know, boldface, underline that word, young. I just don't think that they've really fallen short of what they we're supposed to do.
I think we're all just very, very susceptible to recency bias with Syracuse basketball. So when Syracuse goes out and lays an egg after winning 5 straight and whatever it was, 8 of 9 or whatever it was, like, it looks weird. But if this performance had happened in early January, it would have seemed pretty par for the course. So, no, I mean, I think it does make sense when you look at this team on, like, a more macro view. It's a young team. It's a team with some really, really distinct holes that are not a secret, like, in terms of depth of the interior, and actually depth really all over, because there are 3 guys that can play guard, except for a couple minutes of Malakai at the 2. But it's just not a team that has a lot of different lineup options. So if the standard, you know, looks aren't working, there isn't, like, a magic card that Boeheim can pull out of from his sleeve. Like, Frank Howard has turned into a little bit of that, but I think he's pretty much part of the rotation now, and he, you know, he's a nice player, but he only adds so much, and offensively he's still very limited in terms of scoring the ball. So I think this is kind of the Syracuse that we've seen this year is what it is. It's just some nights the shots fall and they step up on the boards, and Tyler Roberson has a big game, which is super key all the time. And they compete. And then there are nights where Roberson isn't going to be as active because he's still very streaky, and Tyler Lydon isn't, you know, his best self because he's still young. Like, tonight he was totally lost. And Syracuse doesn't look bad. It's just kind of the way this team is going to be. It just so happens that in the last 3 or 4 weeks, Syracuse has shown up on a pretty consistent basis, and tonight they totally didn't, and they lost by 14 on the road. So it's, I don't know. I think if you looked at this team as a whole, it's not that surprising, but I think we all kind of fell into this trap of, oh, hey, we're off the bubble now. We're a tournament team. We're, you know, squarely in the top half of the ACC, where this is, you know, a team that's done to keep on climbing. And, you know, I think it would have been pretty naive to believe that they were going to win out and go win the ACC tournament or whatever. So the problems that this team has still very much exist. And SU just has to hope that they can rebound and this doesn't turn into, you know, a losing streak to end the year, because then we might be in some trouble.
No, completely agree. I think everyone's been in agreement that if, you know, Syracuse finishes the season with 20 wins and, you know, before the ACC tournament, or that they should be in, if they finish with 21, it would leave little doubt that they would be in the field regardless of what happens in the ACC tournament. You know, you brought up a great point there that this team doesn't have options. It's seven deep. That's it. You have your guys who are going to play a lot of minutes, Benajay, Cooney, and they're going to get trotted out there for almost the entirety of the game. And Benajay, you can always count on for his numbers, but then everybody else is kind of a wild card. And if more of those players lean toward ineffective than effective, you know, that's how you get a loss. And I think, you know, anyone tricking themselves into, like, you know, this is a team that's going to make a run, I'm not going to say they can't make a run. We've seen Syracuse teams struggle at the end of seasons and make runs. We've seen Syracuse teams excel at the end of seasons and fall flat. I think that, you know, more than probably any SU team in recent memory, this is going to be completely and utterly dependent on matchups. And that goes to the ACC tournament, too. They're capable of beating anyone, but anyone within reason that doesn't have, you know, an easy answer for what they are when they're operating at about 75% efficiency or more. So I think there's a lot of teams that they can beat if they're playing that well. I think there's a lot of teams that they can lose to if they're not. I think teams that play with pace, I think teams that play with pace and play more mistake-free basketball. I mean, we saw what happened with Florida State. They were a team that played with pace, but they had mistakes. They weren't shooting well, and Syracuse was playing out of their mind for a good majority of that game. But teams that can play big and really, you know, I mean, Coleman and Roberson are largely offensive liabilities. The only thing that they really do well is clog the middle. In Roberson's case, you know, crash the offensive glass. So if a team, you know, like Louisville or like plenty of others have something to combat that, it doesn't matter how good Syracuse is. They're probably not going to win, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it is, but it's not something that we should, in my opinion, panic about, because again, like, this is a team that we knew a lot of what they were going into this season, and with luck, you know, any result this year, it helps build toward next year.
Right. I think really this just comes down to this being a very high variance team. Like, this team, and especially in this season of college basketball where there's no dominant team, like, Villanova's number one. I don't think any of us think Villanova's a great team, trash. At least like historically. Yeah, like, would you be surprised if SU could go out and beat Villanova by 12? No. I wouldn't at all. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Villanova ran SU off the court. And both those things could probably happen in the course of a week if they played twice. So I think that's just the team we're going to live with. If they hit shots, if they rebound and stay competitive on that end, they can play with just about everyone. We've seen them play with some of the best teams, like even the North Carolina team that they lost down the stretch. They were super competitive in for the first like 32 minutes. So I think we're just gonna have to live with a little bit of a frustrating, unpredictable team, but, you know, so many of the SU teams are, especially when, you know, we have to rely on free throws and rebounding and everything.
True indeed. And, you know, I think once again it's worth harping on a little bit, you know, because we have the 7-man rotation. I mean, Boeheim's never really going to go deeper than 8, but I think this year, more than any other, hammers home. I mean, you look at a team that has no, you know, alternate lineups. This is the importance of recruiting. This is the importance on hitting, on recruiting, especially now with less scholarships. I mean, yes, the penalties have been decreased a little bit, but you know, and this has been discussed ad nauseum on the blog, here on the podcast, on Twitter, whatever, is that, you know, you had basically like one or two classes that just, for one reason or another, whether it was declaring early, just fluke flaming out, whatever it is, just this team is the epitome of that result. And I mean, the one good thing is that next year we can get right past that, and we can move on to a better future and a team that, you know, is more, I think, properly comprised. But right now, I think this team is the epitome of what happens when an elite program, you know, not the like top obviously, but an elite program has some weird things happen in recruiting for a couple years straight.
Yep, and I think next year, hopefully, this team is a little more balanced when we add, obviously, Chukwu to the front court. We have Tyus Battle to the back court, Matt Boyer, who I think should be able to play right away as a nice wing. So, and obviously, we're losing the two guards, but overall, I think there's a chance this team is even more able to cope with some of these issues and a little more well-rounded next season. Hopefully they can just make up for the loss of Benajay and Cooney, which will be big, especially like even tonight Cooney played really well and he hasn't really been a angry talking point for people for a while now, which is good.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, that's definitely an underrated part of things, and I nudge someone on the site to maybe start writing that up, is that, yeah, Cooney hasn't played amazingly, but he hasn't played poorly in quite a while. And that, you know, that's directly coincided with this nice streak. I mean, he's cut down on turnovers, it seems. He hit 5 of 10 from three tonight. Like that's the Cooney you want. And that's the Cooney that usually results in, a win or at least a closer game than this. The problem was he was the only person hitting three. And that's where, you know, things get more problematic. You have, you know, Cooney starts to get doubled and then other people aren't taking those open shots. I mean, there were only three other threes hit the entire night. Malachi hit two, Benajay hit one, and then Cooney had five. That's really not what you're looking for, but at the same time, like it's not Cooney's fault that no one else is hitting those shots.
Yeah, I think Cooney's kind of settled into a role as the third option for the team. I think Benajay or Malachi really takes over as number one depending on the night, and that allows Cooney to get more looks, shoot more efficiently. The downside is you're not going to get as many. I mean, there just haven't been that many that many nights where he's gone off for like, you know, 25. But he's also just not taking that volume of shots. So, but overall, I think it's been a good thing for the team because you do have Benajay and Malachi who are a little more well rounded offensively, and then it allows Tooney to just do what he does best and focus on getting good looks and playing good defense. So I think going forward, I mean, that tonight, obviously, he wasn't, you know, killing Louisville. He wasn't able to, like, drop 25 and keep it close by himself. But overall, the last 3 weeks, I mean, we've heard very little about Cooney on Twitter, where the first month or two, and then, pretty much all of the last 2 years, it's been, like, constant Cooney bashing because he's tried to carry the team himself, and that's when you get, like, 3 of 13 performances for 10 points and, you know, he took one shot from inside the arc.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Like, when Cooney plays hero ball, that's when things go south dramatically and very quickly. I think Benajay's consistency has been a gift for Cooney, and I think Malachi Richardson's ability to hit shots has also been a load off. Yeah, I'd like to see Cooney drive the lane a little bit more because he is such an effective shooter. He's a great foul shooter, so drawing, you know, those calls inside is preferred, and I've written article after article about that myself, and others have too. But yeah, I think that I can't find anything to complain about if he's going to hit 50% of his shots from three in a given night and end up with five threes. That's not something you want to complain about, especially when, you know, it's largely minimal turnover basketball. He's playing smart, and I think that it's just a shame that it's taken this long in his career, and this is not to give him a free pass for everything, but it's just to say that, like, you know, some of Cooney's struggles have been a direct result of, you know, being the only guard that could hit a shot for extended periods of his tenure. So, yeah, I think the fact that he can play off Malachi and Benajay now is a huge, huge boost and could end up, you know, giving him a really nice ending to his career at Syracuse with fans finally kind of, myself included there, finally kind of coming around to his value with the program.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just took a while to settle into his role on the team. It really took a while. It took like 4 years, but I'm glad we have him because I, you know, I feel like he has another big performance or two before we're all done here. And hopefully we can give him a lot of time for that and play fairly deep into March, but we'll see.
Fingers crossed on that. I guess we'll kind of switch gears a little bit. Dan, I mentioned an article from Monday where I mentioned 8 contenders in the ACC and how, you know, it's a really kind of loaded group at the top of the conference. And the bigger issue there is that while North Carolina, you know, went into the week with a 2.5 game lead on Syracuse, there were still, you know, again, 8 teams clustered in that 2.5 game, you know, area. Plus, despite the fact that UNC was 10-2, them, Miami, some of the others at the top of the league had some of the tougher schedules going down the stretch. So I guess talking through that a little bit, I mean, who would you say is your odds-on favorite right now? I know I kind of said Miami is still the team to beat, but, I mean, you look at some of these schedules, I mean, I'm really honing in on Notre Dame, a team that, you know, if healthy, at Georgia Tech, at Wake, at Florida State, versus Miami, versus NC State. 5-0 is not really out of the question there, and if Notre Dame can go 5-0, they just kind of have to root for 2 losses from the Tar Heels during what is a pretty rough stretch for them to end the season.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, they're one of the most efficient offenses in the country overall. And like you said, their stretch is very favorable, maybe the easiest on this list that you put together. Like, they on paper, they should go 4-1, and that's giving Miami the game. And 5-0, like you said, is very much in play. So they wouldn't shock me. I still like UNC just because they have a couple DMs on people. They're beating Duke right now. It's like I think it's a 4-point game at half, and it seems like UNC is a little more in control of things than that even dictates. But I expect them to win this one.
I think Matt Jones is Matt Jones officially out?
I don't know if he's officially out, but apparently it didn't look good. I actually haven't seen it. I walked in like right before we started.
It didn't look good when I said it. I don't know if he's back in. And if Matt Jones is out for an extended period of time, you might as well just hand it over to the Heels at this point, this one and the one at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, then Duke has 5 players. It's because Emile Jefferson just doesn't seem
like he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds like, I mean, and I'm not, you know, accusing the Duke of doing kind of what SU did in 2010, but it almost seems like an AO thing where we're, you know, we keep on hearing timetables and then they just keep on getting stretched out. It just seems like his injury, he's just not recovering from it all that quickly. And maybe they're just trying to hold out for the tournament. Maybe get him back for the ACC tournament, get him a couple games. But I wouldn't bet on – we just haven't heard enough about him being around the corner. So, yeah, I mean, UNC doesn't have the easiest road. They have 2 with Duke, including the one that's the second half just started. Miami, Virginia. So that's really tough. And Syracuse, which should still be a tough game, assuming we don't close the program after tonight's embarrassing performance, which I think a couple people on Twitter want us to do. No, I mean, that's not the easiest stretch by any means, but I also think UNC is maybe the deepest team in the country, them or Kansas. It's tough. I just think they're very talented. I think they have some really, you know, solid seniors, so I wouldn't bet against them, but Notre Dame is an interesting one, which you raised, because their schedule just mapped out really well for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I feel like Notre Dame, especially from those of us who are familiar with Notre Dame basketball, and I don't think ACC fans are necessarily on board with the idea or just familiar with the idea of just how consistently good of a program Notre Dame has been under Mike Bray. But obviously the big kind of caveat there is, but they haven't been to the Final Four. Now, they almost got there last year, and and I would give them credit for that. I just think that, like, for some reason, the thought of Notre Dame being a national title contender never crosses anyone's mind, just because of how many times they haven't done it. And I'm, even for me, someone who's familiar with the Irish, I just feel like we already in my head, I'm thinking, oh, well, like, Notre Dame's probably going to get like a 3 or 4 seed, and they're probably going to lose the Sweet 16. Like, it's, Dan, do you have the same kind of narrative in your head that no matter what this Irish team does in the ACC regular season or the ACC tournament, that, like, the season's not going to end, you know, with a championship?
I don't think I'll be picking them to win the title in a month, but I also think the Kentucky game last year, from which many of the bid players are back for Notre Dame, I think that did a lot to kind of change the perception of them being a total tournament bust team. And that was obviously a loss, but they gave Kentucky all it could handle, could have easily won the game. And you bring back a lot of guys. Demetrius Jackson, obviously, who missed the SU game, has been great. Zach August and Bonzi Colson give them, you know, a very interesting side inside. They have five guys who are averaging at least 11 points. I just really like teams that are constructed that way, really balanced teams who can kind of kill you in a number of different ways. They have a handful of two guys shooting over 40% from three, guys that play a lot of minutes. They have a couple more than that on the bench. But it just seems like a team that, obviously the SU game aside, which was just a really bad performance for them, and I'm sure some of our fans are burying them for because, again, recency bias happens. But overall, it's a team that seems like it should be kind of hard to totally shut down in every facet, just because they have so many guys who can hurt you in a multitude of ways. So I don't think they're necessarily like a title favorite or anything. But if they're in there as like a 4 or 5 seed, I mean, I don't think there are going to be that many one seeds who want to play them in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, no, I definitely buy that. And you know what? I think if they could be healthy, I mean, who knows what they do in the ACC tournament? If they win the ACC. I mean, obviously, you know, they don't have to win the regular season title to do that. But I think if they can run through the ACC tournament this year, I think they could definitely play themselves into a top two, even if they really can, you know, kind of fail to suffer any more losses in the regular season. They're definitely an interesting team. And you brought up a good point about, you know, last year's squad and how most of that team is back. You know, they played Kentucky really, really close, and they actually kind of created, I mean, Wisconsin didn't really change anything about what they did in their game, but I feel like they kind of put together a pretty solid blueprint for what Wisconsin with their personnel could do to Kentucky. And I think that at least in part, you know, contributed to why the Badgers were able to knock off Kentucky in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, they and Wisconsin, I wouldn't say were like super similar, but I think they had enough of the same pieces that Wisconsin could take a lot from them. Obviously, Wisconsin had Kaminsky, who was a very, very unique talent, and a couple other guys, Decker, who, you know, was incredible in that tournament. But I just think there was enough of an overlap in terms of what the two offenses to do that, like you said, I think there was a little bit of a blueprint drawn. And actually, I just looked it up. Notre Dame is the number one in adjusted offensive efficiency on KenPom this year.
Weird.
Duke is number two.
Weird again. I'm sure Duke is close to the bottom in defense, though.
Duke's 105 in defense. Notre Dame is 233. So if you're going by the old adage of, like, you need I think UConn a couple years ago blew this up, but for a long time, I think every national championship was, like, every national champion was top 30 in both offense and defense, and I think UConn totally ruined that. But they're, like, the one example against it. But if you're looking at that as a metric, and like top 30 in offense and defense efficiency, Michigan State is there, Kansas is there, Virginia, Villanova, Miami's close, West Virginia, interestingly. But there aren't a ton of teams that. Yeah, West Virginia's like weird. Like they play a very distinct style. They kind of beat people up. Sometimes West Virginia just doesn't come to play. Like, and there are a lot of teams like that this year. That just on a given night, like most of the time you get a good effort from them, but sometimes West Virginia gets beat by like 25.
Yeah. And you know what? You brought up a good point there. I was, I remember somebody tweeted about this the other day. It just slipped my mind who it was. Could have been anybody. Could have been national. Could have been somebody at Syracuse beat. They were talking about how, I think that Yeah, there was like one team outside the top 20 in defense or some, or top 30 in defense, one or the other, that won the national championship in the last like 25 years. And then the Syracuse in 2003 was the only team to win the national title without a future NBA point guard, or not future NBA guard, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that is, we could have had one. Thanks, Billy.
Billy Edelman.
He's doing good work with kids now, so that's good.
Too true. All right, before we hit halftime, Dan, where do you think Syracuse finishes in the regular season for the ACC? Just a general place, assuming that they probably finish top eight.
I'll go with, and I'm just like blindly doing this, I'll go seven. I think they wrap up, I'm going to give us, let's say, I think I kind of feel like we're due to beat Pitt. Pitt's just kind of reeling right now. I'm not impressed with them. We have them at home. NC State's just been bad. Obviously, I think NC State could beat us because Cap Barber's amazing, but I'll give us that, and then I'll say we went at Florida State just because the last matchup didn't give me a lot of reason to pick Florida State. So give us three more wins to get to 21 regular season. I'll say we finished seven, maybe six, but there's just a lot of parity in this, like, 5-8 range. So give me SU at seven, get that first bye, which apparently Bayham doesn't love, like the double bye, so that's fine. I don't know that I agree, but you know, hopefully pick up another game or two in the ACC tournament and probably be in the 7 or 8 seed range for the NCAAs. And this year, honestly, that's fine. I'll take it. I'm just glad we're in it after what we were in like late December.
Yeah, you know what? I'd buy that. I mean, I'm gonna say eight. Just because Clemson has a tiebreak on us, just because I do feel like we have a tougher schedule than they do. I think it really depends on Duke's health, too. Obviously, if Duke loses Matt Jones, they're screwed, and we could probably leapfrog them. I do think that, and I said this on, when we were talking on Slack today, SU really needs to get to that sixth line if they can, because that sixth line means playing the winner of Georgia Tech in Boston College. And that's where you want to be, because you want a free pass basically into the semifinals.
So basically, if we could like beat UNC, that'd be nice.
If we could beat North Carolina, we'll be on that sixth line, in my opinion, at least. And yeah, that would mean you get one of those god awful teams, and a pretty good chance at getting yourself to the semifinals. And if Syracuse is an ACC semifinals team with 21 regular season wins, there is no doubt in my mind that they will be in the tournament.
No, that'd be a ridiculous exclusion. Yeah. Like, that'd be the all-time biggest snub, especially this year, okay. Where there's just not. It's not like there are, you know, championship contenders or like classic championship contenders falling from the rafters. Like, Syracuse is as likely to win the whole thing as like any of these other 5 through 8 possible seed teams. So. Yeah, I still think we're in pretty good shape. Tonight was super ugly, but I think we're going to come play basketball in a couple days. I don't think the program's going anywhere. I think we can continue to donate and buy season tickets and stuff going forward. we're not going to close down shop.
No.
We'll be okay.
We'll be okay. This is also like the softest, dumbest bubble ever. So I wouldn't – I mean, the difference between bubble team and lock – is probably as thin as it's ever been. That can be a bad thing for Syracuse, but I have faith that it's a good thing for us.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Louisville also like finishes super strong, because they pose no threat in terms of like bouncing us back a couple like friction waves of the bubble anymore. So if Louisville wants to win out, that'd be great too.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I don't really care. All right, halftime. Dan, what have you been drinking?
A couple interesting things this week, and one super interesting thing that I'll leave for the end. The first couple were two beers from Long Island City Beer Project in Queens. One was their Gal Friday Sour, which was like really, 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 really sour. I don't think it was like, it's not the best sour I've ever had or anything, but it was fairly drinkable. It like legit really, really sour. Probably not the most balanced thing in the world. But if you like sours, it was pretty good. It was interesting to say the least. I also had their Ardent Core, which pulling up now, I'm trying to remember what this was. I think it was a Saison farmhouse, really nice. So those are the first two things I've had from them. I'll probably end up stopping in there at some point since it's over in Long Island City, which isn't, you know, too far from me in Manhattan here. I had the Easy Rider from Black Hod Brewing, which was very good. Session IPA, which obviously we've seen a bunch of recently. I'll say it wasn't quite as good as the Founders or the Boat Beer, which I had last week. But also, I mean, it was, I'd drink that any day too. So that was very nice. I had, another carton beer, their, BDG, their Brunch Dinner Grub, which was, a brown ale, a little heavier, pretty malty. I wasn't as big a fan of it, as a lot of people are. Has a pretty good rating, like close to a 4 on, Untappd, but it was pretty good. Still interested in trying some other, more of their stuff. And then to top it off, on Sunday, a friend came down from Vermont and brought a pack of Hetty Topper. So I appreciate them forever. That was fantastic. Obviously, that's the famous double IPA from the Alchemist Brewer, which you can really only find in Vermont, or if you get lucky, elsewhere. I will say, I haven't had the Pliny the Elder in a while. The only time I had it was when you sent it over. I say the Pliny's probably a little better, but they're very similar. And, you know, I wouldn't turn either one of them down ever. So that was fantastic and a very happy surprise because I didn't know it was happening. So, yeah, that was my beer week. Pretty good overall, I'd say.
Nice. Yeah, drinking Hetty is never a bad thing, no matter how frequently or infrequently you get to enjoy it.
No, I definitely understand the hype, and it was a nice way to top off the Boston College win, which seems so long ago now that the Syracuse program is being shuttered.
So I drank a lot in the last week. Some things, let's see. Mumford Brewing over here in L.A., Mind Clouder, their double IPA, grabbed that over at one of my favorite spots in the city, Father's Office. If you've ever watched anything on Food Network or whatever, they have... They'll usually talk about some of the best burgers in the country, and specifically Los Angeles. Father's Office definitely makes that, and their beer selection is also fantastic. So if you're ever in L.A., we'd highly recommend hitting up the Culver City or Santa Monica location. They have just... I'm not even going to go into it. I won't even do it justice. Just look it up. You'll want to order it. Had Mango Even Keel. Ballast Point's been doing a lot of these fruited IPAs, and the Mango Even Keel, they're... the mango version of their Session IPA was very, very good. I also went down to the brewery over in Orange County, so got some pretty awesome stuff there. They had a berry sour, just called Berry Sour, on from Friday night. They usually do a couple casks, and that was left over from that. Got to try out Laurences. That's their kind of raspberry blonde. Sour, have another bottle of that sitting around in my fridge. Had some Phil Mish Mish. It's a apricot sour that's sitting around in my fridge now. What else? Got to head over to the Smog City, one of my favorite local spots, if not my favorite local spot. And I know I've mentioned before, Cuddlebug, they're like I think it's apricot and something else. Maybe passion fruit sour. And Snugglebug is a kind of raspberry version of that. And that's probably the best beer I'm going to drink all year, to be honest, at least as far as new stuff. So, so good. Definitely recommend that one if anyone happens to be in L.A. or trades regularly. I would definitely grab one of those. Since Founders is out here, got to try out some of their stuff that I might not have had before. I got to try Project Pam. Dan, I think you might appreciate this one. It is a black IPA, but aged in bourbon maple syrup barrels. So
I have not seen that one yet out in the wild, but I'll be on the look for it. Sounds good.
Yeah, it was very, very good. Got to cap off my Valentine's Day with that one. And then, since I'm serving jury duty over in Torrance, found out that I'm like 2 minutes away from Smog City. So went over there after surfing and had some more stuff from them. Circled back on Snugglebug, had Cuddlebug as well. Amarilla Gorilla, one of my favorite LA IPAs, is back out. So grabbed a taster and, of course, grabbed a bottle to go. Then Buzzworthy is there. They had this, it's good, interesting, I forgot who they collaborated with, but they collaborated with somebody on this one. It's like a honey-flavored braggot, and it kind of just tastes like a, not an overly sweet, but kind of like a dry, sweet stout. So yeah, very good.
So if we see pictures on like Gawker of someone drinking like straight from a growler in jury duty in California, that might be John.
Could be, although they give us so many breaks that I could just drink during those. Anyway, it's time for everybody's favorite game. Let's read flawed bracketology predictions, and then Dan and I make blind guesses based on things that are not going to happen because we are weeks away from the season finishing. Give Dan his usual, you know, 20 seconds or so to pull up Joe Lenardi's latest. Not that we see him as the end-all be-all. He's actually quite bad at nailing the seeds, though he usually gets the field pretty well.
I actually already had it open, so
perfect.
Very prepared tonight. He's been like, have you noticed that he's been by far the hardest on Syracuse out of like the national people? Like, he has us a good like two seed lines below everyone else.
Oh, easily.
Every week.
And then of course he has his alma mater, St. Joseph's, you know, like firmly in the field. And I mean,
not only his alma mater, but also his employer.
Also fair. He had, but I will give St. Joe's this now that they're, well, they beat Dayton tonight.
Yeah, and they had another nice win like a couple weeks ago, right? Maybe they beat someone else pretty decent.
Yeah, so they're probably in now. I mean, the Dayton win's pretty good, but
and they're a name team. Like, it's not hard to put them in. They beat Princeton, who's actually pretty good. They beat Temple. They beat GW. So yeah, all right. Not a bad little resume.
I'll buy that. All right, so let's do what we usually do. Go bracket by bracket. Head to the East first. Villanova's the top seed. We've already said that's BS. And oh look, they'd probably face Connecticut in the second round and they'd lose. So,
when has that ever happened? When has Villanova ever lost to UConn in the second round of an NCAA
tournament? Dan, don't do this to me because you know what happened in that tournament.
Oh right, never mind.
But this is the problem.
Moving on.
This is the problem. You on the bright side, you knock out one of those teams. On the other hand, that means one of them gets to advance. This is actually an intriguing bracket, because I think you have four legitimately interesting, cool teams here. It's even if it goes chalk, it's still going to be cool. You've got West Virginia and Maryland. We mentioned West Virginia already. I think Maryland, we've both said numerous times, the Terps have the talent to get to the Final Four and win it all if they want. I think you're looking at a West Virginia and Maryland matchup in the Sweet 16 for sure. I think Villanova loses to Kentucky for sure. I don't know if they lose to Texas, but either of those teams against Villanova would be interesting. Connecticut hasn't been playing well lately, which makes me doubt the upset potential there. But if Villanova can get out of the first two rounds, they definitely lose to Texas or Kentucky. In my book. So I'm going to go with, begrudgingly, I'm going to go with Kentucky getting out of this bracket, but I hate myself for it.
I'm kind of feeling similarly. I think Kentucky could, I mean, I'm not going to weigh too much in one game since we just spent the whole podcast making fun of that notion, but the way they did South Carolina the other day after Calipari got tossed 2.5 minutes into the game, like that team is so talented and there's, you know, they might just not have it this year, but there's also a chance they put it together at the right time. Would not be the first time that happened with Kentucky in, you know, similar circumstances to the UConn jokes we were making just now. But again, not a believer in Villanova. I think they could beat Michigan or UConn, but like if Caris LeVert comes back and is healthy, wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he is back now, but if he's like 100%, wouldn't surprise me if Michigan came out of that little pod there. I'm not feeling UConn this year at all. I know that's probably not the right thing to do after all the evidence we have, but it just doesn't seem like they don't have that guy this year.
Right.
We knew Kemba Walker was great, and we had just watched him dominate the Big East tournament. We knew that Shabazz Napier was really good. This year, I mean, they have some nice players, but they're just not. I don't know. I just don't see them having that X factor guy who's going to go and win them a bunch of games. They have some nice pieces, but they're just. I don't think they follow that model.
Well, they also schedule so poorly this year. And, you know, No Escalators was talking about this on Twitter, and I agree with him, is that, like, UConn scheduling, like, we did in a lot of ways when we were in the Big East, but at least we had the Big East schedule to fall back on. Like, UConn was scheduling some pretty piss-poor teams, and as a result, like, a UConn team that scheduled better would find themselves hanging around maybe a 6 or a 7 seed, but this UConn team is going to have to get through a 1 seed, a potential 4 seed Kentucky. I mean, there's a lot stacked against them because of just the way they constructed the schedule.
Yeah, and the American gets no love. Their big chances were in Atlantis, and they lost to us, and they lost to the Zags.
And the Zags have fallen off a cliff.
The Zags, yeah. Both those were only by 3, but you know they're only going to get so much credit for that. They lost to Maryland by 10. The other big game they had on the schedule was Ohio State, and Ohio State's not very good. They beat Texas, which, you know, will look good at the end of the year because Texas has really rebounded, but Texas wasn't very good at that at the time. So they have some interesting stuff, but the AAC is such a mediocre, boring league, especially when their best team by far can't play in the tournament. I'm just not a believer in UConn this year. And if they go and win another title, you know, I'm just going to pick them every single year after that because that'd be totally ridiculous. I agree with you on Texas and Kentucky. I already brought up Kentucky. Texas, like, they're playing super good basketball right now. I think people were very quick to totally write them off. Shaka Smart's just too good a coach. Like, that, if we get Texas-Kentucky, I think that'd be a really, really awesome matchup. I'm going to lean the Wildcats there, but I like either of those teams to be Villanova or UConn or Michigan, like you said. On the other side, we brought up West Virginia. I think they're the best team in that whole pod by far. Utah just, I don't know, I feel like they've just been sneaking up these rankings after having a pretty weird midseason. They were pretty interesting early in the year, but they're not super impressive to me. I think the Pac-12 overall, like, there are some interesting teams, but I feel like they're kind of getting a lot of credit for just a lot of parity overall. Like, even Oregon, like, I don't buy Oregon as like a 2 seed. Yeah. I think maybe a good 4 seed, but they're like on the 2-3 line every week now. Providence, just, you know, they've been pretty bad the last couple weeks. Chris Dunn's great, but he can only do so much. So, like you, I'm riding with Maryland. And then I'm going to stick with what you did. I'm going to take Kentucky over Maryland to go to the Final Four, which, you know, not the best thing. I've kind of learned to accept Kentucky as someone who is always going to be around. And I think there is a level of like, impressiveness in terms of what Calipari is able to do with basically an entirely new roster every year. If you just get past like all of the allegations and all the, you know, inherent sliminess and everything, if you just try not to care about that, there is like something to, oh my God, what a block in the UNC game. I think I am too. I'm on ESPN3, but I think you can find things to appreciate about the Kentucky program if you kind of forget like all of the insinuations about how their program is being built and everything.
Oh, for sure. I mean, honestly, like when I hate Kentucky, but when I watched them live at the Final Four last year, I was impressed. I was impressed by just what that team was doing from a basketball standpoint. The fact that until the final seconds ticked off that clock, you thought that there was a chance that they could beat Wisconsin. I mean, it was just this, just very physical, very just. You just knew that they were top to bottom the most talented team in the building that weekend, even though they didn't win it.
Yeah, I think like back in 2009, 2010, it was very popular to say that Calipari just wasn't a very good coach. He just had a lot of talent. And I think I probably agreed with that at the time, and just watching them every year, like, I no longer think that Calipari's not a good coach. Like, I think he does get the most talent, but, like, he's coaching, like, a very, very new team every year, and he recruits just the best talent, kind of regardless of how they play, and then he adjusts to his players, and it's very different from what Boeheim does, and it's a totally different skill set, and he pulls it off pretty much every year, except for the one time when Nerlens Noel got hurt and they were terrible. But like, if you're going to sign for one embarrassing NIT year when you're going to the Final Four like 75% of the time,
yeah, I'll take
even
that.
When you're an 8 seed. Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to accuse him of cheating or whatever, that's fine. You know, you might not be wrong, but I don't know how much different he is than anyone else at this point. But just the fact that he can go out and get these players to play together, and like, they do seem pretty much every year to be very, very unselfish teams, which is totally flies in the face of like what you would expect a team full of, you know, four of the top 10 recruits every year go to Kentucky. You'd think that those guys would all want the ball at all times, but he just gets those guys to buy in. So that was the weirdest segment of like 3 minutes of praising John Calipari you'll ever hear on this. But I do think it does need to be said sometimes. Like, if you actually just watch them as a basketball team, they are incredibly impressive, even when they're very flawed at sometimes.
Agreed.
He masks a lot of things.
And after 10 minutes of talking about the East bracket, we are now going to try to talk about the rest in a little bit less time. Looking at the Midwest, Valpo Duke screams upset. I don't, you know what, Duke, is, you know how this works now. And people brush this under the rug. Duke, every year they don't go to the Final Four lately. They get upset in the first round. And Valpo's actually a pretty good team this year. I don't buy Duke being healthy, as we talked about earlier. So, yeah, I'm going Valpo. I don't buy Colorado or Wisconsin. I don't buy Wisconsin as a 9 seed, to be honest, Lenardi, but whatever.
Yeah, seriously. I think they were just, like, off the bubble a week ago. I know they beat Maryland, but,
that's
like,
still nonsense.
There should be a little bit of a process here.
Yeah, I got Kansas over Dayton to get the Elite Eight, but... Again, like, I hate Dayton because of what they did a couple years ago, but I could see them making noise. I could see Valpo getting themselves to a surprise Sweet 16, but I'm going with Kansas at that top half, and then looking at the bottom half, this lays out really nicely for Miami. At the same time, don't ignore that USC-Monmouth game, which could be a hell of a lot of fun.
They've played twice already this year.
Oh, that's true.
And they've split those games. It's a rubber game. That's what I've been looking for.
I feel like the committee would try to avoid that. So that's how – and I think this is where Lenardi's bias comes in, is they feel like you flip-flop St. Joe's and Monmouth there.
Or anyone. Like, why would you want to put those teams against – aside from the storyline of having, you know, a three-game – but, like, that's not really fair to either of those teams.
Well, yeah, but, like, I mean, look, Lenardi put St. Joe's against Providence in Brooklyn, like, when he should be sending them out to Des Moines.
He just doesn't want to do to Des Moines.
That's probably it.
Is what this is. Actually, no, he's stuck in Bristol, so he probably doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. He probably doesn't want to send his boys to Des Moines.
No.
But, which I don't really blame him for.
Yeah, I don't. But notably, I don't buy Iowa, and after tonight, even more reason not to buy them. I've now seen them two straight weeks just completely shit the bed against inferior teams. So, yeah, I'm done with Iowa. So let's put USC into the Sweet 16, despite playing poorly of late. Let's get Miami against Kansas in the Elite Eight. And let's go with Kansas, because I do think the Jayhawks are probably playing the best basketball in the country at the exact right time.
Yeah, we're in – I hate being all, like, total agreement, but, like, I was trying to map this out in my head, and pretty much the same thing. Like, the Valpo thing, like, obviously Duke could lose because Duke's very flawed. I do think that could also, like, stream of the 12 seed that everyone takes, yeah, and then they lose horrifically. I do like Kansas. I've been preaching Kansas a while. I think they're one of the more well-rounded teams in the tournament. Duke, I don't buy. Dayton, I think, is overrated. I think Yale could beat Dayton. Yale's pretty interesting. Colorado-Wisconsin is just not a very fun matchup. I'm interested in Baylor. I know there's a little bit of, like, you know, Scott Drew not being the best big game coach, but he has made a couple of Elite Eights, and they seem to be flying under the radar just because the top of the Big 12 is so insane. But from the bottom, I like Miami as well. I just think they're the most consistent team there. USC, USC or Monmouth against Iowa would be very scary for if I was a Hawkeye fan, just because I think Iowa is kind of falling back to the pack, although I don't see them still being a two seed come Selection Sunday, so they probably won't have to deal with it. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think Kansas over Miami in what would probably be a pretty well-played game.
Yeah. Heading down to the West, you know, I think Oklahoma is the best team in the country right now. Like I said, I think the Kansas is rounding itself into the best team in the country. I still like Oklahoma. I think the Zags are a joke, and I say this all the time. I think California, whatever. What could be interesting here, Oklahoma Notre Dame in a Sweet 16 matchup. I mean, I have family ties to San Diego State, so I don't want to bash the Aztecs too much, but the Aztecs are trash this year. Yes, they had a nice win streak, but when you compare this Aztecs team to past Aztecs teams, there's just not the same, there's not the same leadership. There's not the same quality defense. Like, there's just a lot missing, on the other side, of this one. I'm reluctantly going to pick Indiana to get to the Sweet 16. I would consider picking Indiana to beat Virginia, but I won't. I think Virginia, because they don't have to face Michigan State, finally gets itself to the Elite Eight, but they lose definitively to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I can't pick Indiana. I can't pick Tom Crean. I just can't do it. I think they're super talented. I think they have a talent to be like a top three seed. And Tom Crean's, he's just so Tom Crean. I can't do it. So I'm going to take Temple to beat them in the first round.
Okay.
And just free myself of any, because like Indiana, I think talent-wise should win the bottom of that bracket easy.
Yeah.
Maybe not easy. Virginia's very good. And I'm going to take Virginia.
Everybody else.
Everyone else, yeah. Oregon's overrated. Hawaii, I have no idea. South Carolina's being exposed. VCU, obviously, is not Shaka Smart VCU anymore. I'm taking Virginia and feel pretty good about that. I'm taking Temple to beat Indiana and maybe beat Oregon as well.
If Oregon beats Hawaii.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Hawaii.
Me neither, actually.
Not a thing. I guess they're pretty good.
Because they play in the Big West. The only thing I know about Big West basketball is UC Irvine. And that's only because local press actually covers them because, like, UCLA.
They have a 7'6" dude.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, they played well in the tournament last year. They were my, like, upset special against Louisville, and they almost did it. And then, you know, UCLA is playing like shit. USC's fallen down a little bit. So, yeah, and San Diego State's playing poorly. So, as far as local, like, this is what the media is covering in Los Angeles now is how good UCI is, even though they're still not in line to take this bid from Hawaii.
And does Robert Kapula even call Hawaii's basketball games? Because if not, I'm totally out.
He doesn't, but he definitely should.
Like, why? Why not? What are you losing, Hawaii basketball?
I mean, what else is he doing?
I don't know. I agree with you on the top. I like Oklahoma. I'm all in on Buddy Hield. He's amazing. Notre Dame, I think, is very interesting. Like we laid it out before, obviously their defense lacks. I could see Oklahoma, like Cousins and Hield, just going bananas against that defense. But I think that would be a very high-scoring, fun game. I'm taking Oklahoma over Virginia. I feel like every week we alternate between, like, being kind of out there with these picks and then also just like now this week we're kind of boring with them, but it's the way Lenardi mapped it out, so blame him.
Yeah, exactly. And then the South. You know what? Like, North Carolina is too deep. Wichita State could actually, like, I could see Wichita State pulling this upset against Villanova very easily, but against North Carolina, it's not going to happen. I don't buy Florida.
No, Florida's not very good.
No, Florida.
There's so many teams in this bracket. Like, I get concerned about Syracuse maybe falling
off.
But
then you look
at
how bad these teams are.
Like, Florida's bad team. Wisconsin, I know they beat us, but they've just woken up. Like, there are some, like, even like the seven seeds. Is LSU have a much better resume than Syracuse aside from having maybe the best player in the country?
They're
like,
not
really.
Going to after tonight because they're getting Providence smoked by Bama.
Providence is plummeting. South Carolina might not make the tournament at this point. I'm not that concerned. Like, Syracuse, I mean, a lot of it depends on how much the Boeheim thing factors in, and I don't even know if it should, but, you know, whether it does or not, we're not going to complain. But, Like, if that's any kind of consideration, even if it's not, like, Syracuse still is right in the mix and has enough big wins where it should rival here, because some of these, like, 7-8 teams are just not good basketball teams. No.
Also, can we talk about the fact that Duke's about to beat North Carolina somehow?
Grayson Allen's going to have another buzzer beater, isn't he?
Screw that guy. He's going to he's gonna manage a hedge fund soon. That's his career. Either that or he's going to be Syracuse's next starting quarterback. Those are the only two options for a Duke guard.
Do you have any idea if he's ever played football before?
Probably not. God damn it. I just hate Duke so much. I know I'm a little bit ahead of you.
Yeah, I mean, he just made the free throw. It's 74-73 with under a minute left. Yeah. We're going to give you we're going to have live reactions at some point here.
Yeah. Well, I already had my live reaction. I'm that far ahead of you.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's what I get for being a twerp cutter.
Yeah.
I can't look at Twitter during dramatic basketball games.
I pay an exorbitant amount of money to not be a cord cutter every month. But yeah, getting back to...
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, never mind, he backrimmed it. Yeah, so the South.
Yeah, getting back to the South. look, North Carolina's playing in Raleigh. That's weird.
Wait, that seems sketchy to me. Are they allowed to do that?
Well, they are the one seed. I'll give them a pass here.
Does that happen every year? It's like,
actually,
do they...
Lenardi sends Duke out to Denver in this.
That's pretty funny. There's no way that actually happens. God damn it. Duke won. That's ridiculous. I guess that helps us, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't even know, because we play both these teams.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, well, no. Now the problem is that we're definitely not hitting that six line, because I was definitely banking on Duke. Oh, Matt Jones on crutches.
That's not great.
No. But I was definitely banking.
That might, like, that's a big win for them, but they're down to, like, five players now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like their like, prospects to do anything, but, I mean, this definitely helps them make some noise here, and, I mean, it screws us, because, like, the only way that we overtook North Carolina was if North Carolina, like, really played poorly down the stretch, and, I mean, no, we weren't looking to finish first necessarily, but, yeah, if there was any shot at it, I think Duke is kind of now, like, I feel like Duke just got itself, is going to end up getting like a top two seed in the ACC, and it's going to piss me off.
Yep. If they do, they're going to earn it, because those kids are going to play so many minutes. Yeah. Like Marshall Plumlee's about to play like 35 minutes a game.
I'll give him credit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not to take, they're a good team. I'm not going to take anything away from them.
No.
But, man, did not expect that one.
No. Anyway, South bracket while we wrap up. All these teams are trash. Florida State wouldn't be in the field anymore anyway, because they're getting smoked by Georgia Tech tonight.
I don't even see them there. And Purdue would wreck them, either of those teams. Purdue's really pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I think St. Mary's isn't awesome. I got North Carolina getting out of this top half pretty easily. We've learned our lesson with Iowa State. Won't do it. just Chattanooga's actually an interesting 13, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, moving away from that. Bottom half of this thing screams Michigan State. And again, like, I hate you, Tom Izzo, but you look at this, like, Syracuse and Xavier are the only teams in that entire bottom part worth a damn. And even then, you know, Syracuse is, we know what Syracuse is, and I don't really think they can beat Xavier in that second round. I think Xavier could also be tested by UAB in that first round. I mean, I would love nothing more than to beat a one-man team in LSU. And then face UAB, because Xavier didn't get up for the 15 game.
Yeah, and from the Syracuse angle, Ben Simmons is absolutely terrifying in terms of like playing that middle of the zone. So I don't really look forward to that, but I also, on the other hand, think that Johnny Jones trying to coach against the zone would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, I could see Ben Simmons just ruining our lives, or I could see Syracuse beating LSU by 25. Like, That does not strike me as a team that would handle the defense well on paper. Xavier, I don't know. They're like one of the few consistent teams at the top this year. They just seem to be hanging around. I haven't watched them enough to really form a great opinion on them, so I'm going to trust that they're pretty good, just because they've been, playing pretty strong basketball all year based on like what I've seen. I like Michigan State out of the bottom.
Always. Stupid.
It's Izzo, and they're actually good, and Denzel Valentine's playing well now. Like, it's, you can't pick against them. Arizona's not as good as they've been in recent years. Vandy, the fact that Vandy's in this field is crazy. Vandy is like, aren't they like 15 and 10 or something? Like, they're not that
in
good.
In the SEC
Cincinnati's
also.
Like, again, another example, like, we're going to make the tournament. Does Vanderbilt's in this field? Florida State's in this field. And I tweeted Rhea out of the top again. North Carolina, I think, is just by far the best team there. Purdue's interesting. I think Purdue...
Against any other one seed, they're more interesting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, North Carolina's size kind of negates what they do well in a big way. Iowa State, I mean, I would love for Iowa State to be good because they're so much fun and they bomb people out. But, like, I've just learned enough. Like last year, we were so far in on Iowa State, and they just hurt us so much. But A.J. Hammonds for Purdue, he's great. He's one of the best bigs in the country. But North Carolina can just throw centers at you all night, as Syracuse saw.
But at the same time, North Carolina just lost to Duke playing five guys. So that's the thing. It's like we can buy in on North Carolina. And I buy in on North Carolina, but and this is coming from someone who watched a hell of a lot of North Carolina basketball growing up and everything else. Not that I am a Tar Heel sympathizer, but growing up, I always watched every North Carolina and Syracuse game, and those were my top two choices when it came to college. So, while I don't have a soft spot for them anymore, I understand everything there is to understand about Tar Heels basketball and their runs in March. I just think that this is another season, and we talked about this last week, is that despite all the fun and parody and everything else, we're going to end up with some BS, blue blood-laden shock Final Four. I don't see the bloodbath that what was it, 2007 was? Or was 2000? No, 2006.
Yeah. 06 was like the all four one seeds? Is that
no,
that year?
I think 07 or 08 was the all four one seeds, but 2 years before that was the 06 one when George Mason was in.
Oh, that's what you're talking about. Yeah, that was the insanity. Well, it was George Mason and then like UConn and...
Yeah, that whole thing was a zoo. Like, where like Florida won as like a 3 seed, but there was like a lot of other like BS. Like, it was just... It was a silly field. I think this year, I do think that despite it being insane, I think that there's a line for the insanity and where it stops. And I think that line allows the kind of a rope to fall between the blue bloods and the non-blue bloods. And that's how we end up with a very blue blood field based on what we projected out, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot, though. You see, like, the crazy first couple weeks and you see some guys like Iowa State losing whoever people are bullish on, or like a Baylor going down or something. But then at the end, like, the teams that have the pedigree sneak through, and that, you know, that's what college basketball, that's what like CBS will be rooting for, because I heard there was some discussion of this, like whether people like upsets or like the best teams winning. And I think it's a combination of both. People like upsets in the first couple rounds, but at the end, like the games that like the VCU, who would VCU play in the Final Four? Butler? Was it?
They played different teams. The VCU, I'm trying to remember. Did VCU lose to UConn?
Not that year. Maybe, I don't remember. I'll look it up. There was like whenever there was those matchups with like the Cinderella teams, like we college basketball fans probably dig it, and like the, you know, maybe they gets this to be this narrative.
The tournament
but,
doesn't make money off college basketball.
No, they want Kentucky. If they could have four Kentuckys, they'd do it every year.
No, and I totally get that. I think, I mean, I don't like it necessarily, because the same thing in college football. Like, at the end of the day, you love parity, you love upsets, but as a sport, you want Alabama and Ohio State and Texas and a couple others to be there every year in football. In basketball, you obviously want the same list of 4 to 7 teams to get into the Final Four. And I think, too, like, from a casual fan perspective, I mean, that's how you keep them interested, is you have the early round upsets that they need to care about, and then later on, they want to still, you want, you know, casual fan, you know, Jane Jones or whoever, like, to say to themselves, all right, well, I got three of the four into the Final Four despite taking some hits in the early rounds, and now I'm really excited about, you know, my potential to win my office pool or my pool with all my friends or whatever it is.
Yeah, hold on. I totally misremembered how VCU did here, because this was the year of the awful Butler UConn game. So
I honestly boycotted that game.
Oh, I watched it.
I didn't
it
even
was,
watch. I wouldn't do it.
It legitimately, like, I promise everyone this. I don't say this for my animus for UConn, because I've watched UConn win enough things before and win things like in entertaining fashion. still the worst basketball team I think I've ever watched. Like, and it could have been like it could have been Syracuse beating Butler, and I would have celebrated that game, and I would probably tell you like, yeah, that was an awful basketball game. So don't need to do that again. But yeah, like the brass want to see Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, UNC, etc. You know, narratives and storylines go far enough, but like they're rooting for the big teams to make it, and more often than not, like we have at least two or three of them.
Yeah, and yeah, we had two or three of them. I was in Indianapolis last year. I complained about the fact that it was all blue bloods, save Wisconsin. But you know what? Like that place was electric the entire weekend. Like the press felt it, sponsors felt it, the fans felt it. I mean, it was the place was wild all weekend, and like that's what they need. That's what they want. I mean, and for some reason, like as someone who makes money in various ways because of college sports, not always proud of it on both ends, like there's definitely something weird but something rewarding about, like, at the end of the day, the upsets and the underdogs and all that make the season, but the championships are made by the ones who always win it, and those are the teams that make money, and those are the players that eventually go on to make more money. It's a weird balance. I don't understand how college sports does it and has kept people interested for this long doing it this way, but they have, and just kind of have to accept it.
Yep, and hopefully at some point that money starts to funnel down to other people that deserve it.
Yeah, like the ones that are actually playing the sport. That'd be cool. Let's do that.
Not to go make this podcast run 1:30 by soapboxing, but yeah, if you want to tweet me about that, you know, I can throw some characters at that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so fun. I don't know. I'm still excited for the tournament. I as long as it's good basketball overall, I think we'll all be happy. Yeah. There have been some years where it's just like shitty games after the first weekend, and that's never fun. I mean, even if there aren't a ton of upsets, as long as there's like compelling bat drama the first couple days and then it sits out. Like last year's tournament, I thought was pretty well played overall. If it's like that, I think we'll all be pretty thrilled.
I think the shot clock changes help. I think we're in for,
yeah, I mean, what was the stat that I think Billis said, someone posted, it was like,
when
we went from like, yeah, was it like four teams last year were scoring 80 points a game and now it's like 30 or something? Like that's a pretty big jump.
Hey,
I don't know if that's the right stat, but it was something along
those
lines.
Yeah, it is something along those lines. So yeah, Dan, I think we've exhausted all possibilities on this thing. We've cut it at about an hour lately, and I'm surprised that considering we didn't really talk specifically to Syracuse, and actually I'm not surprised because we didn't talk specifically to Syracuse for the last, you know, 25 minutes or so, that yeah, we stretched it a little bit longer.
After tonight's game, the last game in the history of Syracuse basketball, as of course.
R.I.P. Syracuse Hoops.
Yes. I mean, we probably should have spent more time on Syracuse considering we're never going to watch them play again.
Yeah.
But I think people will be thankful that we didn't spend too much time on the Louisville game, and no more than we needed to.
Agreed. All right. Dan, as always, thanks for making some time.
Yes, sir.
And for everyone else, you can rate, review, subscribe on Blog Talk, on iTunes, on any other service that you might use to listen to us. Say nice things about us. It actually helps. And yeah, go Orange.
Happy lacrosse season.